Welcome to the Paranet UFO Continuum, a one-hour program dedicated to a very strange phenomena, unidentified flying objects. Whether or not you believe UFOs exist, the controversy is real, and this program will try to get to the bottom of it. Your host is Michael Corbin, director of Paranet Information Services, a global communications network based near Denver, Colorado, dedicated to the investigation of UFOs. We invite you to keep an open mind as we discuss fascinating and strange subjects in the world. Here's your host, Michael Corbin.
Good evening and welcome to the Paranet UFO Continuum. I'm Michael Corbin. Tonight we've got a lot of stuff, a lot of material to condense into 1 hour. I want to thank our new affiliates. This is our beginning of our program to go up on satellite tonight. And I want to welcome our new affiliates that will be tuning in, KBIM in Roswell, New Mexico, KCRT in Trinidad, Colorado, KNRY in Monterey, California, WROK in Rockford, Illinois, and, of course, KNUS right here in Denver, which will be tape delayed between midnight and 1 a.m. So those of you in Denver will be hearing this show pre-recorded. Tonight we're going to talk about the crash at Roswell. There has been a recent book, a book has been recently released concerning the crash at Roswell. And it appears that there has been some compelling evidence to demonstrate beyond a reasonable doubt that indeed something happened in the deserts of New Mexico in July of 1947. My guest is Kevin Randall. He is the co-author of the book The Truth About the UFO Crash at Roswell. Don Schmidt is the other author, and Kevin will be our guest tonight. For those of you who want to call in, our number tonight is 1-800-836-2009. That's 1-800-UFO-2009. So give us a call. Now, before we bring Kevin up, we want to play a news piece that was aired in July of 1947. Mark Rodiger got the tape from ABC, and this is actually a historical moment and a piece of news. So we're going to roll that, and then we're going to bring our guest up.
The American Broadcasting Company and affiliated stations present Headline Edition with Taylor Grant. From all over the world, wherever the day's headlines are made, Headline Edition brings you accurate, timely reports on the news behind those headlines, plus informative in-person interviews with the men and women who made the headlines today. Today's edition presents a roundup of the latest developments in the finding of a flying disc, an eyewitness report of today's significant action in the U.N. Security Council. Ohio Congressman. Now, here's Taylor Grant.
Late this afternoon, a bulletin from New Mexico suggested that the widely publicized mystery of the flying saucers may soon be solved. Army Air Force officers reported that one of the strange discs had been found and inspected sometime last week. Our correspondents in Los Angeles and Chicago have been in contact with Army officials endeavoring to obtain all possible late information. Joe Wilson reports to us now from Chicago.
The Army may be getting to the bottom of all this talk about the so-called flying saucers. As a matter of fact, the 509th Atomic Bomb Group headquarters at Roswell, New Mexico, reports that it has received one of the discs which landed on a ranch outside Roswell. The disc landed at a ranch at Corona, New Mexico, and the rancher turned it over to the Air Force. Rancher W.W. Brazell was the man who discovered the saucer. Colonel William Blanchard of the Roswell Air Base refuses to give details of what the flying disc looks like. In Fort Worth, Texas, where the object was first sent, Brigadier General Roger Ramey says that it is being shipped by air to the AAF Research Center at Wright Field, Ohio. A few moments ago, I talked to officials at Wright Field, and they declared that they expect the so-called flying saucer to be delivered there, but that it hasn't arrived as yet. In the meantime, General Ramey describes the object as being of flimsy construction, almost like a box kite. He says that it was so battered that he was unable to determine whether it had a disc form, and he does not indicate its size. Ramey says that so far as can be determined, no one saw the object in the air, and he describes it as being made of some sort of tinfoil. Other Army officials say that further information indicates that the object had a diameter of about 20 to 25 feet, and that nothing in the apparent construction indicated any capacity for speed, and that there was no evidence of a power plant. The disc also appeared too flimsy to carry a man. Now, back to Taylor Grant in New York.
Well, there it is. And, of course, as we all know, the government subsequently came out and explained that crash as a weather balloon. And, Kevin Randall is going to tell us what it was. And instead of a weather balloon, it seems that it was something else. 1-800-836-2009 is our call-in talk line. We are particularly interested tonight to have callers from Roswell give us a call to let us know what's going on with the apparent UFO flap down in Roswell. We've understood that there's been a considerable amount of news coverage on it, and I also understand that there has been some film or video taken of the object. So, give us a call. Kevin, are you there?
I'm here.
Good evening, and welcome to the Paranet UFO Continuum.
Well, thank you very much.
Really glad to have you back.
Glad to be back.
Also, before we go any further, I wanted to let everybody know again that tape that we just heard of the 47 broadcast was supplied by Mark Rodiger, who's the scientific director of the Center for UFO Studies in Evanston, Illinois, and we want to thank him for that. So, Kevin, let's talk about the release of your book. I've read it. It's a very interesting read. It seems like you have compiled a considerable amount of information that does show that something beside a weather balloon crashed in Roswell.
I couldn't disagree with you on that one. We spent an awful lot of time. We spent about 5 years actually researching the book, and it was only in the last 2 years that we were able to find the witnesses, the eyewitnesses that could provide us with the final bits of evidence that we needed.
Uh-huh. And what does that show now?
I think based on what we have found, I don't believe there's any doubt that what crashed at Roswell was an extraterrestrial spacecraft. I think if you take a look back into July of 1947, you see in the early days, June and early July of 47, nobody has a clue as to what's going on. The scientific community is talking about it being something involved in atomic research. Military is saying it's not ours. We don't know what it is. Scientists are postulating there are craft from another planet. Nobody really knows what's going on. Suddenly on July 4th, 1947, something crashes outside of Roswell, New Mexico. The military recovers it, and they have the answer. By the 9th of July, you see a change in the newspapers. Suddenly, they're no longer carrying the number of articles they used to. And, in fact, there's an article that comes out that says the Army and Navy moved today to stop the rumors of flying saucers whizzing through our atmosphere. And the question becomes, why suddenly on July 9th did they care? And the answer is they had one, and they didn't want people to begin to speculate about it.
Okay. 1-800-836-2009 is our line. Give us a call. Our guest is Kevin Randall, and the book is The Truth About the Crash, UFO Crash at Roswell. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment, so sit tight. This is Michael Corbin, and this is the Paranet UFO Continuum.
If you want to know what's really out there, you have to see for yourself. And if it's in the night, you need a NightSight vision device. NightSight carries a full range of first, second, and third generation night vision devices from both Russia and America. Aim these goggles, glasses, viewers, or gun sights at any light source, no matter how dim, and you'll see where it's coming from. Use them for watching livestock and wildlife, for individual safety and security, neighborhood watch programs, law enforcement use, or to look at those strange lights in the sky. Night vision binoculars start at $449, a $50 break from the regular price. For more information or to place your order, call NightSight at 1-800-227-5731 during business hours Mountain Time. That's 1-800-227-5731. See what's really out there with NightSight night vision devices. 1-800-227-5731. NightSight, a division of the Electric Outlet.
Paranet Information Services is your electronic window on the world of UFOs, accessible by computer and modem. Paranet keeps you up to date on the world pulse of ufology with sighting reports, interesting findings, and general discussion on the mysterious UFO enigma. Paranet features one of the most comprehensive text file libraries in the world on the paranormal, available for a small online fee. So plug into power and knowledge through Paranet. The BBS number is available 24 hours a day. Call the data line at area 303-429-2713. That's 303-429-2713. Or for more information, contact Paranet Information Services at area 303 303- 303-429-2654. That's 303-429-2654. You're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum. Whether or not you believe in UFOs, there's a lot about the subject you haven't heard. Stay tuned. Keep an open mind. Call in and join the discussion. Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbin.
Welcome back. Glad you're along. Our show is the Paranet UFO Continuum, and I'm Michael Corbin. Just as a reminder, we're going to be here each Sunday night at 8 o'clock Mountain Time. That's 10 Eastern and 7 Pacific, so be sure and tune in. Our guest tonight is Kevin Randall, co-author of the book, The Truth About the UFO Crash at Roswell. And Kevin, before we go any further, we're going to take a call. We've got Fred from Roswell. Fred, are you on?
Yes, I'm here.
Good evening. Thank you for calling. You're on with our guest, Kevin Randall.
Yes. I'm calling on, I have three issues that I'd like to discuss with maybe with Kevin. One, I moved here to Roswell about 3 years ago, and I'm fascinated by UFOs. Number one, and probably foremost, is if this crash here at Roswell was only a balloon or whatever, I don't understand the government keeping it secret all this time. I worked in the government for 30 years. It just doesn't make sense. Number two, I spent 30 years traveling around the world in the United States Navy, and I've never seen a UFO, and trust me, I spend many hours at night watching the skies everywhere. Never really seen much more than a couple satellites once in a while.
Have you seen anything recently?
Well, I'm on both sides of the issue.
Uh-huh. Have you seen anything recently?
I haven't.
I've heard there's things going on down there. What's going on down there?
Well, that was my third thing now. I just seen recently on the television that they've been seeing things here in Roswell. I'm up almost every night at 3:30 in the morning, and I sit out for about 15, 20 minutes. I never see nothing.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. Maybe it's the wrong timing.
Okay. Do you have a question for Kevin?
I think my question is, how does he feel about the secrecy? And also, you know, I got checking into it when I get out here. It is my understanding that the government still goes out to the crash site and cleans up, because I had intentions of going out there. I'm kind of a lucky person. I expected maybe something get pushed up from the earth. And that happens, you know. That's where stones come from.
Kevin, you got any comment?
Well, I just, we've been out there with metal detectors. On the site is identified by Bill Brazel up near Corona, and the other site much closer to Roswell. And we've searched for things like that, and we've never found anything, which is not to say it's not going to be found or somebody won't find something. But I think the other comment is looking at the weather balloon explanation. First of all, the people at Roswell should have been able to identify it as a weather balloon. At some point, it gets to Fort Worth, where it's finally identified as a weather balloon. But they go to extraordinary efforts to move this thing around the country. All this for a weather balloon. So there's a lot of things that just don't make good sense in the case in that respect.
Fred, thank you for your call.
Hey, no problem.
Kevin, now, go over the... you guys published the first book was in 1992, right? Kevin, are you there? Seems like we've possibly lost Kevin. We'll bring him back. Let's see. Should we go ahead and take another call? Yeah, Mrs. Lucero. Mrs. Lucero, can you hear us?
Yes.
Yeah, welcome to the show.
I was wondering, you know, there was a lot of metal debris out there. How can they explain if that was a weather balloon?
Well, that's one of the issues that are that's discussed in the book. And when we get Kevin back, he'll probably be able to address it a little better than I. But there was so much wreckage and so much debris that was collected that it just didn't make any sense that it was a weather balloon. But I think that the weather balloon story was concocted to cover up for what had really, you know, really happened out there.
You know, some people say that a United States undercover deal.
Uh-huh.
Would that be something like
sure,
that?
Sure, it's possible, but I think Kevin's going to say that you know, that they have not had any, you know, anything like that. They've proven through a lot of testimony, both first and second hand testimony, that what they recovered out there was an alien spacecraft. And I believe, is Kevin back on the line with us?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Kevin. Sorry about that.
Okay.
We've got Mrs. Lucero on the line, and she was talking about the idea of, if there was so much debris, how could they say it was a weather balloon?
And I would agree.
Yes.
There were actually two distinct sites that we've been able to discover. One of them up near Corona, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And then the impact site where we have the eyewitness testimony where a craft and body were found.
Right.
And the debris becomes secondary now because we have testimony about the craft. We have direct testimony about the bodies, people who were there saying, this is what I saw. So the debris field up near Corona becomes secondary to us now because we have much better evidence and much better information available.
Okay, Kevin, I want to go back to the first publication, the book that you guys put out. Was it in 92?
91.
91. And that was the UFO crash at Roswell. And the deal is that in that book, you did not discover that there was possibly an alien that was alive. And I understand in this book now that there is reports of seeing an actual alien that was alive.
There are secondhand testimony to
okay.
that effect.
All right.
But the point that must be stressed is it's secondhand testimony.
Mm-hmm.
We do not have any firsthand testimony that talked about one surviving the crash. And that's a real distinct difference. We have firsthand testimony about the craft, about the bodies.
Uh-huh.
But when we get to the idea that survived the crash and was taken to the base, that is secondhand testimony. So we do not have people who were there saying, yes, I saw one alive.
Okay. 1-800-836-2009 is our call and talk line, 800-UFO-2009. Our guest is Kevin Randall, co-author of the book, The Truth About the UFO Crash at Roswell. We're going to take a break, so sit tight, and we'll be right back. This is Michael Corbin, and this is the Paranet UFO Continuum.
If you want to know what's really out there, you have to see for yourself. And if it's in the night, you need a NightSight vision device. NightSight carries a full range of first, second, and third generation night vision devices from both Russia and America. Aim these goggles, glasses, viewers, or gun sights at any light source, no matter how dim, and you'll see where it's coming from. Use them for watching livestock and wildlife, for individual safety and security, neighborhood watch programs, law enforcement use, or to look at those strange lights in the sky. Night vision binoculars start at $449, a $50 break from the regular price. For more information or to place your order, call NightSight at 1-800-227-5731 during business hours Mountain Time. That's 1-800-227-5731. See what's really out there with NightSight night vision devices. 1-800-227-5731. NightSight, a division of the Electric Outlet.
This is Fred Hayes. In 1970, I was a lunar module pilot for Apollo 13. During that mission, an onboard explosion caused us to abort our lunar landing. Our safe return home involved many workarounds. It underlined how important the human element is to space exploration. The space station is America's next step in manned space flight. If we're not careful, however, that important program could be canceled. $7 will be returned for every dollar spent on the effort. That's quite an important investment for the future and to provide knowledge essential to the future of spaceship Earth. Some experts say that without the space station, we will have no manned space program. That would be a tragedy for our nation and a retreat from the progressive achievements of the past three decades. For information on how you can support the space station, call 1-800-84-SPACE. That's 1-800-84-SPACE.
This is the Paranet UFO Continuum, a weekly program dedicated to the mysterious and fascinating world of UFOs. If you're interested in learning more about Paranet, the world's foremost communications network dealing with the UFO phenomena, call us at area 303-429-2654 or write to Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And welcome back to the Paranet UFO Continuum. 1-800-836-2009 is our call and talk line. That's 1-800-UFO-2009. My guest tonight is Kevin Randall, co-author of The Truth About the UFO Crash at Roswell. And Kevin, let's talk a little bit about the bodies and the effort that the Air Force made to cover this up, and you know what took place.
What we've been able to determine, again, based on eyewitness testimony, is about within hours of the crash, the military moved in, cordoned off the entire area, preventing civilians to get in. They actually encountered a number of civilians already on the scene, archaeologists led by Dr. W. Curry Holder from Texas Tech University, escorted them out of the area, silenced those people, and then collected the bodies, took them on to Roswell Army Airfield, stored them there for a number of hours, and then flew them out in two separate aircraft to Andrews Army Airfield at the time, later Andrews Air Force Base in Washington, D.C., and finally on to Wright Field in Dayton, Ohio.
Now, this is actually significant. This actually was discovered by the Air Force prior to Mac Brazel actually finding the debris, right?
What we have done is changed the conventional wisdom. It always started the story with Mac Brazel finding the debris field up near Corona and telling the military about it and them going off to cordon area and then discovering the craft and the bodies later on. What we've been able to determine, again based on eyewitness testimony, is that the military had already picked up the craft and the bodies prior to Brazel coming into town. The crash takes place on July 4th. Brazel discovers the debris field on July 5th and reports into town on July 6th, telling the sheriff and the Air Force, or the Army at the time.
So they actually had a lead or a head start on working this cover.
They had already picked up the craft and the bodies, and they're sitting around Roswell going, aren't we clever? We've got this whole thing contained. Nobody knows what's going on, and the next thing you know, there's Mac Brazel on radio station KGFL in Roswell talking about this. Rumors are running rampant in the town. And so they're forced into a press release issued by Walter Hott on July 8th, and he takes it around to the four media at the time in Roswell, the Roswell Daily Record, the Roswell Morning Dispatch, KGFL, and KSWS, letting them know what's going on.
Right.
Then
3 hours
later, of course, General Ramey at 8th Air Force Headquarters in Fort Worth said, no, they've made a mistake. It was simply a weather balloon. And it buried the story for 30-some years until Jesse Marcel, the air intelligence officer at Roswell, came forward and said he'd handled pieces of a flying saucer. And the sad thing about that is the only newspaper that would cover it when Marcel came forward was the National Enquirer. So, of course, nobody believed the story.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we're going to take a call. Jeremy in Roswell. Good evening. You're on with our guest, Kevin Randall. And what's your question?
Hi, I lived on the old Walker Air Force Base for a few years. About 2 years ago, I moved there and have lived down there for quite a while now. We've all heard stories of the hidden hangar out there on the base, and that there's a security guard who's got orders to shoot to kill if anybody goes around. And we were wondering, it's a favorite pastime to drive around the base, stand on the hood of your car, and look for the guy. But we were wondering, where is it, supposedly?
You know anything about it, Kevin?
I have heard the same rumors. We haven't found it. In fact, there was a newspaper article that came out in London, of all places, talking about Steven Spielberg's new movie about Roswell. Of course, there's no truth to that rumor, but they said Hangar 84 out at Roswell is sealed off by armed guards. You can't get inside. They've got orders to shoot to kill. I was in Hangar 84 about 2 weeks ago. I don't know where it is, but I've heard the same rumors. I've never stumbled across it. I've been all over the base myself, too.
Okay. Jeremy, thanks for your call. Let's go to Jeff in Trinidad, Colorado. Good evening, Jeff. You're on with our guest, Kevin Randall. Jeff? Well, Kevin?
Yes.
You're still with us?
I'm still with you.
Yeah, okay. We apparently lost Jeff. 1-800-836-2009 is our number, 1-800-UFO-2009. I guess Jeff is back. Jeff, are you on with our guest? Nope, guess he's not. Kevin, I'd be curious to know what your take is on the reason that they went ahead and issued, you know, that press release to the to the press. Was that part of the plan to do the cover-up, to ultimately bring it back around to the water weather balloon?
I think there's no doubt that the press release was a brilliantly conceived way of stopping the rumors.
I have to agree.
They had the material picked up, the craft picked up. They thought they had it contained, and then, of course, Mac Brazel comes in. He's talked about on the radio. It creates a whole other level of rumors.
Uh-huh.
And what they did was they say, how do we stop the rumors? Well, they confirmed the rumors in the newspaper at one level of command at Roswell, and then they issued an order at a higher level of headquarters, the people who were supposedly better informed, saying, no, no, the guys down in Roswell were simply overenthusiastic for what they were saying, and what we really have is a weather balloon. And that's the story that went out all over the country. It killed the story on the morning of July 9th. There was an awful lot of activity around the country on July 8th about this story after the press release. But after Ramey went on the radio and the newspapers came out in the morning, the story was dead.
Were you able to talk to Jesse Marcel, before he passed away?
No, I was not.
I'm just curious. You know, I would imagine that he was pretty agitated over the idea that he was used as the sacrificial lamb for the cover up.
Speculation on my part, I would agree.
Yeah, because
he probably was more than just a little bit annoyed, which may explain why he talked when he did.
Yeah.
But that's all speculation on our part. It's a
sure.
question that, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to get answered.
Right. 1-800-836-2009 is our call and talk line. Our guest is Kevin Randall, co-author of The Truth About the UFO Crash at Roswell. We are going to try to go back here now to Jeff in Trinidad. Jeff, you're on with our guest, Kevin Randall. Good evening.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi there. I was wondering if you could kind of explain maybe what I might have seen. This is going back to about 1970, and I was about 15 years old back in Schenectady, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And it was what I used to do was go out and look for the spacecraft, you know, when they used to say they'd be around going over my area.
Uh-huh.
And this thing here, it was at a different time of the evening. It was probably about 9 at night. And it was like a zigzag, like Zorro almost. It would go straight, you know, just like a Skylab would or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then it would go into a zigzag. And I was wondering if any of your gentlemen could speak on that and how common of occurrence that would be.
Okay. And thank you for the call, Jeff. We'll go ahead and answer that off air.
Thank you for your opportunity.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. Kevin, you have any comments on that?
what we're talking about apparently is a nocturnal light.
Uh-huh.
And there's all kinds of explanations for that, the least of which would be an extraterrestrial spacecraft. There's all kinds of things that are in the night sky. The mind plays all kinds of tricks on people. There's aircraft, satellites, as we talked about, all sorts of things. So without a lot more data, it's really hard to explain what that might have been.
Okay. All right. Let's see. We're going to go next to John in Roswell. John, good evening. You're on with our guest, Kevin Randall.
Hello. Yeah, Kevin, my question would be if the bodies was recovered before Mac Braswell came into the picture, did Mac see the bodies, or how did he know what these bodies looked like or anything?
What we speculate, and I have to make it clear that this is speculation, that in the course of his incarceration, I guess, at the Roswell base, trying to convince him of the necessity for him to keep the thing quiet, they provided him with additional information. Otherwise, there would have been no opportunity for him to see the bodies. Talking to the son, Bill Braswell, a number of times, he said that his dad was the mind that if they could not convince him that he needed to keep quiet, then he wouldn't do it. But if they could convince him, then he'd never tell anybody what he had seen. He mentioned to Frank Joyce, who was at radio station KGFL, that the bodies weren't green. So there seems to be some testimony that Mac Braswell saw the bodies. His son says that his father told him a number of times there was a lot more to it, but he couldn't tell him about it. Our speculation is that in the course of trying to convince him of the need for secrecy, they provided him with additional information that he did not have himself, showed him photographs or something like that. That's speculation on our part, and it's the only way we can explain some of the testimony we have.
Did that answer your question?
Okay, yeah. Thanks a lot.
Okay, well, thanks for calling.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Kevin, the number is 1-800-836-2009. That's 1-800-UFO-2009. We seem to have heard from people in Roswell and Trinidad. Our affiliates joining us on the West Coast are KNRY in Monterey. We want to hear from you, the people out there, and WROK in Rockford, Illinois, and give us a call. We're going to take a break, and when we return, we'll be talking with Kevin Randall, co-author of The Truth About the UFO Crash at Roswell, and we'll be back in just a few moments. I'm Michael Corbin. This is the Paranet UFO Continuum.
Get the latest UFO news delivered right to your door with Continuum, the official quarterly publication of Paranet Information Services. Continuum offers a serious look at the world of ufology through hard news reports and interesting and provocative interviews with leading ufologists and investigators. There's a source and resource section to help you locate information on UFOs, plus much, much more. Each issue is also packed with information from the Paranet Information Services International Communications Network. So be informed with this comprehensive publication. Subscribe now and receive 5 issues for the price of 4. Send check or money order for $18 to Continuum, Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. That's Continuum, Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. Do it now.
We didn't want a professional announcer for this message because we're trying to save the Earth. Don't get me wrong, having a professional announcer would be great, but that would have taken a big casting session with people driving from all over to get here, wasting a lot of gas and adding to the pollution. And the way we see it, if our ad isn't kind to the Earth, how can we ask you to be? Use cloth shopping bags. Buy recycled paper products. Switch to energy-saving light bulbs. Yeah, maybe they're little steps, but one little step leads to another, and pretty soon they're big steps. Look, I can't tug at your heartstrings or really lay it on thick like a real announcer, but I am taking the bus home. So maybe that'll help make up for it. Call EarthShare, 1-800-488-8887. This message was brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
You're listening to one of the most unusual programs you'll ever hear. It's the Paranet UFO Continuum, and it deals with one of the most fascinating subjects around. Once again, here's your host, the director of Paranet Information Services, Michael Corbin.
Welcome back, and this is the Paranet UFO Continuum. I'm Michael Corbin, and our guest tonight is Kevin Randall, co-author of The Truth About the UFO Crash at Roswell. This is a very interesting book, and I highly recommend it because this presents a very tightly worked investigation by Kevin and Don Schmidt, and it deals specifically with the crash of a UFO in the deserts of Roswell, New Mexico in 1947. And Kevin, let's talk a little bit about the MJ-12 connection, if there is one.
I think if you've looked at the book carefully, you realize that we believe MJ-12 is a hoax.
Right.
The document is a hoax.
Uh-huh.
Clearly, if something of this magnitude had happened, there would have been an oversight committee created to exploit the find.
I think, doesn't General Exxon say that too?
Absolutely. General Exxon, who was base commander at Wright-Patterson in 1965, confirms an oversight committee. Interestingly enough, since you mentioned him, General Exxon named a number of people who he believed was on the committee based on his observations while in the Air Force, and they don't agree with the people who whose names are listed on the front of the MJ-12 document. There are lots and lots of problems with MJ-12, from the fact that there is no control number on the document. There's an executive order that has no control number on it, or the number that is on it is not a number that was in use at the time. There's all kinds of internal inconsistencies. There's stylistic problems. In fact, the thing that alerted me was the fact that Admiral Hillenkoetter's rank was wrong. He was supposedly the briefing officer who created the document, and yet his rank is wrong. He wasn't an admiral. He was a rear admiral, and people who've been in the military, officers from the military, realize that it's not the kind of mistake that a military officer would make, but it's the kind of mistake a civilian would make who'd never had any association with the military, wouldn't realize that a military officer would get his own rank right. Civilians and people like that don't understand that an admiral is an official rank, where a rear admiral is also a rank, and Hillenkoetter would have gotten that thing wrong, right. So there's all these sorts of problems that lead to the only conclusion I think rational people can draw, is that MJ-12, the documents, are fraudulent.
Sure. And, of course, Exxon's credibility is right up there along with perhaps Barry Goldwater, would you say?
General Exxon, he was a general officer on active duty. What does that tell you about the man? Very credible source. Lots of a very distinguished career in the military. Was, you know, the people who have the opportunity to wear general stars on active duty are very few. A lot of people get the Brigadier General stars as a gift at retirement, but don't have an opportunity to wear the stars on active duty, so that if you've had that opportunity, it suggests that you're in a very small minority.
Okay. We're going to go to a call. We've got Linda in Monterey. Good evening, Linda. You're on with our guest, Kevin Randall.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I'm calling about an incident in 67, December of 67. A friend of mine and I were walking to school, and right over our heads, and this was in the morning, and it was daylight. Actually, it was fog, and the fog was lifting, and as the fog lifted, we saw this. It was a UFO. I mean, that's all I can say. It was. It made no sound. It was just above the telephone poles. This was not way up. It was metallic.
Fairly close to you then.
Pardon?
Fairly close to you then.
Very closely. It was metallic in color. It had an antenna going up. It was wound. It looked like you'd taken two saucers and put them together.
Okay.
And the reddish orange and green lights were blinking around the outside of it. It crossed over our heads. We just kept walking. We didn't know what to do. And it followed along. And when it crossed over our heads, it wobbled. And I thought it was going to fall. I thought it didn't. It wobbled and followed along until four blocks. It got in front of us. And it changed at that point. It became glowing. It became glowing and it came at us. We ran at that point. We just ran. And we ran about four blocks, turned around, it was gone.
Very interesting.
Pardon?
Very interesting.
Very interesting. And it wasn't until, this was just a few years ago, I was talking to another friend of mine, and I had told her what had happened, and she said, well, I saw the same thing. And I said, about that same time of year. So I don't, have you heard of anything like that?
A couple of points that you brought up when you were telling your story is the idea that it wobbled. That seems to be consistent with a lot of reports. And the two plates or the two saucers being put together is also a fairly consistent thing. Kevin, the device that crashed in the desert at Roswell for a long time was thought to be a disc-shaped object, but it wasn't, was it?
No, it was not. And again, our testimony. I think one point we need to stress is there's already been some criticism of our book because we have eyewitness testimony, and we've listed that in the back of the book, and people are saying, well, there are people you interviewed. It doesn't mean anything. Well, certainly it does. We're telling you where the information came from. We're telling you how we gathered it.
Mm-hmm.
So when we get to this idea of the object that crashed not being a saucer, but actually more of a heel-shaped object, we get that not from a single source. It comes from a number of sources. Lewis Rickett, counterintelligence NCOIC at Roswell, two or three weeks before he died, told Don personally that the object was heel-shaped. Drawings we've gotten from two separate eyewitnesses, show an object that's clearly more heel-shaped than saucer-shaped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Linda, thank you for your call, and stay tuned each week for the Paranet UFO Continuum out there, okay? Thank you. Our next call is from Chuck in Rockford, Illinois. Good evening, Chuck. You're on with our guest, Kevin Randall.
Hello. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
I had an experience back in 66 in the fall where I saw something, and this was at night. It was in the country, and I was driving, and it was just like a laser beam, and whatever it was rode down. Are you there?
Yes.
And it touched the ground. Well, it touched down in this field, and when it touched down, it spooked birds out. And I always thought, I would be brave and go up and talk to them or whatever.
Right.
I just continued on.
Uh-huh.
But this same evening, there was UFO sightings all over northern Illinois, through the East Coast. Governor Romney was on a flight, and he claimed that he saw something that was kind of cigar-shaped.
Mm-hmm.
And then later in the newspaper, they explained this away as being a fragmenting meteorite.
That's interesting. Of course, the 60s was a pivotal year for a lot of things. There was a large flap in the mid-60s, and the Condon Committee came out and shut down Blue Book with their findings.
Oh.
What do you think?
Well, the thing that got me, this was... pre-lasers being common knowledge, and this thing was like a laser beam. It wasn't blue and it wasn't green, but it was some color in that area, in that spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say it was the levitation power source that this device had that it came down on.
Very interesting.
And unless you saw it come down, there's just no explanation.
What do you think they are?
Huh?
What do you think they are?
Well, gosh, I don't know. I know that when this one was present, miles away, they had seen stuff, hovering over houses and that. These were police officers, credible people.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
At the time, I never turned in my sighting, you know, to the news media because, gosh, the newspaper was just, you know, full of it.
Sure.
And but there was a whole bunch of sightings this particular evening that had similar, you know, documentation.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And the quarter was somewhat the same. Now, I'd also had heard one on TV where somebody had lost some period out of their
missing time,
out of their time span. I think they were out somewhere.
Is that your phone there, Chuck?
Not that I know of, but maybe it's the UFOs working on.
Somebody's trying to intercept us. Listen, Chuck, we're going to have to go to a break. I want to thank you for your call tonight.
Yes, I'm going to be listening. I'm interested in this. If you can get more details on my sighting, why I'd like to kind of piece some of it together.
Okay. Well, listen, be sure and jot down our number if you'd like to give us a call to get some more information or talk to somebody about, you know, making a report. We'd be happy to talk to you about it. 1-800-836-2009 is our call and talk show line. Our guest is Kevin Randall, co-author of The Truth About the UFO Crash at Roswell. We'll be back in just a moment, so sit tight. This is Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum.
If you want to know what's really out there, you have to see for yourself. And if it's in the night, you need a Night Sight vision device. Night Sight carries a full range of first, second, and third generation night vision devices from both Russia and America. Aim these goggles, glasses, viewers, or gun sights at any light source, no matter how dim, and you'll see where it's coming from. Use them for watching livestock and wildlife, for individual safety and security, neighborhood watch programs, law enforcement use, or to look at those strange lights in the sky. Night vision binoculars start at $449, a $50 break from the regular price. For more information or to place your order, call Night Sight at 1-800-227-5731 during business hours Mountain Time. That's 1-800-227-5731. See what's really out there with Night Sight Night Vision Devices. 1-800-227-5731. Night Sight, a division of the Electric Outlet.
Paranet Information Services is your electronic window on the world of UFOs, accessible by computer and modem. Paranet keeps you up to date on the world pulse of ufology, with sighting reports, interesting findings, and general discussion on the mysterious UFO enigma. Paranet features one of the most comprehensive text file libraries in the world on the paranormal, available for a small online fee. So plug into power and knowledge through Paranet. The VBS number is available 24 hours a day. Call the data line at area 303-429-2713. That's 303-429-2713. Or for more information, contact Paranet Information Services at area 303-429-2654. That's 303-429-2654. UFOs for real, or are they just fiction? To find out, stay with us for more of the Paranet UFO Continuum with your host, Michael Corbin.
Welcome back. And our guest tonight is Kevin Randall, the co-author of The Truth About the UFO Crash at Roswell. And Kevin, we're about to come up to the end of the show tonight. I'd like to know what is planned in the future. This is obviously a very important book, and it does expose, I think, quite adequately that something further should or must be done. Now, does this tie in anything at all with Senator Schiff in New Mexico and his pressuring the GAO?
Well, the book and the GAO investigation sort of came about accidentally at the same time. There really was no coordination there whatsoever. What we're hoping to do through the book is by providing the level of documentation we have is convince the legitimate media that this is an area to look into. Clearly something crashed in Roswell. Clearly the government covered it up. I mean, these two points everybody has to agree on. The evidence is there. So if we can convince the legitimate journalistic media to take a look at this, they'll come to the same conclusions we are. There's nowhere else to go with it. And if we can convince the legitimate journalistic media, then we can create the groundswell that will help Congressman Schiff solve his problems with the stonewalling by the government.
Yeah. But, you know, what is this going to do for our future? We've got to wrap this up in about 30 seconds. What is what's this going to do for our future? What does it mean for us to know that there has been a crash of an alien spacecraft in New Mexico?
I think it proves without a doubt that interstellar flight is possible.
Okay.
We still get all kinds of debates about whether or not it's possible to get to other stars from our solar system. Clearly, if an alien spacecraft crashed at Roswell, that proves that interstellar flight is possible.
Okay. Kevin, thank you very much for being on our show tonight, and I want to congratulate you personally. The book is a fine piece of work, and
you
and Don have done an incredible job, and I know it's been a lot of long, hard miles traveled and just a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. So thank you very much for giving us this book.
Well, thank you.
Okay, take care. Good night.
Good night.
That about wraps up our program tonight, our first one on National Satellite, and we hope you've enjoyed it. We will see you next week right here at the same time, 8 o'clock Mountain Time, 10 o'clock Eastern, and 7 Pacific on the Paranet UFO Continuum. I'm your host, Michael Corbin. Good night.